Torg Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark, and today we will be going further into the ruins of the living land. We had part one last time, and now we'll be doing part two. And before we get into that, we did get an email from Oliver. So thank you, Oliver, for writing us. And we do encourage you to email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. And then we can read your questions and we can answer those to the best of our ability. Or you can comment and then we will comment back on your comments. So this is, hi, a few questions came up. We'll do these one at a time. So one, it says, does the strike miracle work for grenades or other thrown explosives as they are listed as missile weapons? So the first thing that we would want to do is we would want to go to the strike miracle itself, which basically, if we get past the first fluff, sometimes even the most peaceful of the chosen must pick up the staff. This powerful miracle makes sure that the staff packs a punch. But so strike affects a single weapon. No multi-targeting is allowed. And it says strike increases the damage value of a weapon by +1. It doesn't matter if the weapon is a ranged or designed for melee. Its base damage is still increased. Strike must be cast on a weapon, not ammunition. And it says a weapon blessed with strike counts as a magical for purposes of affecting foes with ethereal or similar abilities that generally ignore normal weapons. And I do want to point out the Torg FAQ, which you can see at torg-gamerreference.com, or if you just Google Torg FAQ. This is, for me at least, it was the first option. You look down through that, it says page 203, strike. The first paragraph should end, strike affects a single melee or missile weapon. No multi-targeting is allowed. So basically they just changed it affects a single weapon to further clarifying that it affects a single melee or missile weapon. So right off the bat, we can ignore anything that would fall under fire combat or energy weapons. The question after this is, like he wrote, grenades or other thrown explosives. They are listed as missile weapons, so as the skill missile weapons. On this, I personally think it would be fine. It's going to give you a +1, +2, or +3 damage. It's only going to affect one, so if you have your bag of grenades or your box of dynamite, it's not going to affect everyone in there. It is an action. You can't multi-target, so you're not going to affect multiple grenades, like I just said. You'd have to do them one at a time. It takes an action, so unless you're multi-action, your action is spent, or you're going to get a -2, barring other circumstances, to a multi-action. And Jay had mentioned before we started recording that strike is so very not used in the grand scheme of thing that seeing it used for something would be kind of neat. So I personally think that I would probably allow it. It's only going to get it up to a +3. But having said that, I can see where by taking away firearms because and energy weapons, that they might, the reasoning behind that, because it does say that it can't be cast on ammunition, but then if it's cast on a bow, not the arrow, it's kind of like a bow +1, +2, +3 to damage. Is that the intent? And I don't know what the intent was when, A, it was written, and two, when it was clarified. So that's going to have to be something that your game master determines. I could see where they're just, no, it has to be thrown like a dagger or a spear, because you're striking with a sword, no other moving parts. But that's kind of my sorry, it's not a yes, no, it's a game master decides, but personally I would allow it. Jay, what are your thoughts other than what I just took the words out of your mouth?
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty obvious that the intent behind the miracle is that it's to enchant a weapon that you're holding, like a spear or a sword or something, and then you can attack people with it. And then if it was a spear or a dagger, like you could hurl it. So I think that realistically it was intended for melee and hurled weapons. But rules as written, it affects any missile weapon, so it would be fine for a bow or a crossbow, or assuming I think crossbows are missile weapons.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, okay, and thrown grenade type objects as well. So, and as I did say before, start like strike has a lot of issues on its own. So I don't really see this as being too unbalanced personally. I think the other thing you also have to mention is that it's for melee and missile weapons only. So no brass knuckles, right? If you're going to allow bows and grenades, then if you're following the rules as written, then you also have to disallow those or dragon warrior claws and things like that.
With the Deathclaws.
Yeah, exactly. Even though it would probably make sense. So it's going to come down on your GM. I would rule as Lehman. I would say, yeah, go for it. But there is an argument to be made that a grenade or an explosive is blessed with this strike energy, but then once it explodes, it's no longer the same weapon anymore, so maybe it wouldn't benefit from it. Additionally, if it had any special properties like poison gas or a shock net or something like that, I would not give the extra damage to that. It would just be frag, like just direct damage kind of things I would add it to, not anything else. But that's what I'm looking at.
So, like for, I think we had mentioned alchemical potions, that would be fine, but if that potion itself had something special, then that wouldn't be boosted.
Yeah, like if it set you on fire, I wouldn't add it to the additional fire every round or anything like that.
But would you do it for, like, if the fire damage that initially came from the blast? Because there's like a,
Probably, yeah.
yeah.
So, Mark, any extra thoughts from you?
The brass knuckles is a good is a good one, because that one's considered, if I remember right, it's considered unarmed attack, right?
Yeah.
And is that why you're saying Deathclaw wouldn't get it also? Because those
Right.
are both unarmed attacks as well,
Yeah.
not melee. There's no weapon there. Your hands are the weapon. That's an interesting clarification. I can easily justify not allowing the energy weapons or the firearms, simply because there are so many different moving parts in a modern firearm or an advanced energy weapon that affect accuracy and things of that nature, that because you can't multi-target the miracle on something, that you can't affect all of the pieces that go into making an accurate weapon. But whereas we're talking about a bow, one bow, or a sword, or a rock shoot spear, right? Those are single, that's very simple, very, a bludgeon. I beat you with this thing and I cause more damage because it's been blessed by this miracle called strike, that it's just better at bludgeoning. Okay, I can see that. And it, as we were talking before we started recording, I think that it's very clear, at least to me, it's very clear that the intent was for the very simple melee weapon, or something simple like a melee weapon that's designed to leave your hand or stay in your hand and cause damage by blunt trauma, that kind of thing, versus these greater problems that we run into, which is part of what makes Torg cool, is that you've got, instead of this one system, right, with one genre of weapons to deal with, and one genre of armor to deal with, and one genre of magic or whatever to deal with, you've got these multiple. You've got science fiction over here, you've got horror over here, you've got primitive over here, you've got, fantasy, high fantasy over here, and all of these things. And when you come up with these things in this with the tunnel vision lens of this is the genre I have designed this one thing for, and it's got the flavor of this genre, and then you expand your view to encompass the entirety of all of them, you're going to have some stuff that comes out that that causes some of these problems, regardless of how hard you write the rule or how many times you game out the mechanics that you put behind it. What if we do it this way? Well, what happens this way? Well, what if we do it? What happens if they go over here and do it? You know, you're never going to get all of the what ifs, which is part of the art form of the game master. And I think from a Torgonized play standpoint, anybody who's using this miracle, you should expect some table variation, as we say, because as Liaman opened up, your game master is free to rule how your game master wishes, within the context of what we've been discussing. I think that it is very cool because it's part of the rule of two that you want to take a miracle that doesn't exist in Core Earth and apply it to a grenade that does exist in Core Earth. And so now you've got the Core Earth doesn't, we don't do miracles because we're not, that's not a thing for us, other than certain things.
It's not
In
well
reality,
known. It's
yeah,
not
in
well
reality,
known.
we don't do miracles, right? But that's cool for Cyberpapacy. It's cool for a number, you know, Living Land, whatever. Now you can do this miracle on this other thing, and now it's you've got this neat cross-pollination, which is what makes Torg Eternity a cool game to me. I do like that Jay pointed out you can't the effects of your missile weapon don't benefit your ancillary effects of your missile weapon don't benefit from the additional damage, but the primary effect, and this is not even like I'm throwing a gas grenade, so my gas should get a benefit. Well, I would say if it does something other than just cause direct damage, there's no point to it. Well, I include strike on it. If it explodes and does 16 plus 1 BD or 16 flat, whatever it is, fire damage to the lowest armor, okay, then strike helps that. But if it does this and then anyone inside is, you know, stymied or very stymied, well, how does strike help someone becoming very stymied because they were affected by the concussion? It doesn't. So strike, you know, there's no point to it. So that's like that secondary stuff, I don't see any point or any reason. We were talking about like Bullet and some of those other miracles or other spells that I don't think you can just because it's a spell component doesn't make that piece of ammunition and bullet a viable target for this, but you couldn't do it anyway because you can't take, well, I guess you could, but you can't take advantage of it for yourself. Could you maybe do it to somebody else's and then they do it? I think that's where to me, that's where strike shines from the standpoint of who's casting it is I'm going to do this thing over here. I'm going to shoot my bow. I'm going to stab somebody. I'm going to hit somebody or whatever. And then I'm going to give the next person that's getting ready to act strike on their weapon because while I can't put it on my sword or my rock shoot spear or my bow and then attack in the part as part of that minus two multi action, I can't take advantage of the effect that I caused in the same round.
Right.
But whoever's standing next to me can. Right, because they go after me.
Right. The only thing I would say is that it specifically says not ammunition, so I would even though it's called bullet, but it doesn't necessarily you're not hurling actual bullets. You could, but it could be a marble, a coin, a stone, or whatever. That to me would still be considered ammo. On that type of stuff, there is
Yeah.
the bless ammo. I think it's either bless ammo or bless bullet. I think it might be bless bullet miracle. Basically, I guess I was thinking about it as you both were talking. As a game master and as a table, answer this question. Do I want the holy hand grenade of Antioch and all the people that are gonna start talking Monty Python at my table or not, and just kind of let that be the thing that do I want this to open up that or not at my table? So good question. There, we'll move to the next one, which is when transforming from Core Earth or any other cosm to another cosm, all perks stuff which are contradictions will change out. What about things that don't cause contradictions, like spells, miracles still being within the axioms, but now are coming from a list that isn't from the transformed cosm? For a better example, Core Earth with Avant-Garde, a dabbler list plus extra, and a spell from the White Witch list, Axiom 12, is transforming to Nile Empire. Could he keep both Avant-Garde and the spells that he has, or does he have to reselect according to his new spell lists? So for this, we'll go back to the FAQ, because there was a question asked. If a character who knows spells, miracles, or psionic powers transforms, what happens to those lists? And the answer is Game Master's call, but spellcasters and Psys should choose new perks or lists, as both arcane traditions and psionic disciplines are strongly tied to the cosm that they're from. However, a character is religious. Religion doesn't necessarily change since they're not tied to the cosm that they're native of. This means that a character could know some miracles that are contradictory, but as we develop the line, there are more miracle lists that are lists that include miracles that are contradictory. So I can't comment on the last part because I'm not sure which or which may or may not have done. I can just know what was decided after this, but as this is, it's basically saying as a spellcaster and as a psionic, all of those would need to change your list. The reasoning behind the religion list not being changed, I think, is because that gets into some real world type things with forced conversion of religion, or as Jay pointed out, this was kind of around when cyberpapacy was coming out, that they didn't want to say, oh, if you're from the cyberpapacy, you have to be part of the cyberchurch faith, that you can't be a Catholic or Protestant or whatever. I will also comment that it is the complete opposite of classic Torg, where if you did not have a faith and you saw a miracle that was in the spectacular range, then you were forced to convert and spend your possibilities, which were also also experience points. So you had to buy it, and you were done. So once that happened a couple of times, my players always made sure whenever they made a new character that they would get a faith add just to prevent a random NPC converting them. When new players came in, they tried their best to convince the person you need to pick up faith in something, and anybody who didn't, then all the miracle workers in the group would be like rubbing their hands together as the fight was on to see who would get the new convert, because then they were spending possibilities and cards and everything to force that conversion. So it's kind of a complete opposite. As a Game Master's call, the players that I play with in that, we would do it with all three of them. We would say the faith, the spells, faith, magic, and psionic abilities would all change. But to be kind of on the safe side, the official is spellcasters, psionics change, and religion doesn't have to. But you could if you wish to. So Jay, did you have anything to add in that?
Yeah, I think the big thing is that when you transform, you become a character from that reality. So if you have a bunch of legacy stuff from outside of that reality that you got through some other means, it doesn't really matter where you got it from. It's still gone. Even if you were carrying around a bunch of guns, they probably transformed too, right? Like, so it's the same as anything. Plus, axiom level does not actually matter at all as far as spell lists or psi lists go. Mm-hmm. All that matters is what's on the list that you have. Both Core Earth and Tharkold have spells above their own magic axiom, and Core Earth has psionic powers above its own axiom level. So it's totally possible to have, like, the axiom is not like a huge limiter that way. It's the spell lists or the psi lists that are the real big deal. When you transform, you should also probably be trying to make a relatively simple transformed character and not going through some convoluted thing, unless maybe you're a gamma character, so you could still take cosm adaptation and then take reality and then do a bunch of stuff, but the odds of that are slim. But also, just like for saving everyone's sanity, because transforming can be, it depends on when it happens, but you don't want to grind the game to a halt trying to come up with the ultimate combo or something. It's usually best just to, and I think Mark's going to talk about this, figure out what the closest analog is. If you were a pyrokinetic, maybe now you're fireballing, et cetera. Don't think too much about it, about like a deep tree of perks that you would go into. Just work with the lists that you have available to you for that reality.
So yes, Mark, your turn to expand on that.
So I think that this is one of the beautiful things within the context of what Torg Eternity was designed to be as a game. The genres that each cosm represent are taken from classic gaming and pulled in to try and have some element of all these different games that we've, for the most part, those of us who are a little more seasoned, read old, in our gaming history, you have played most of the a game or two in the various genres, so have some experience in them, like Call of Cthulhu and Gamma World and things of that nature. A lot of fun, but that's what is neat about Torg is that it's designed to be more of a theater of the mind and a less crunchy game than other games that have 5 foot step and 30 feet hard, this is all you can move, blah blah blah. Whereas you can do that in Torg, but in my opinion, it was designed to be a lot more theater of the mind, a lot more cinematic, and a lot more squish to enjoy the storytelling aspect of what happens when the players at the table go through the adventure that the game master is running. And because of that, transformation becomes more of a thematic event to me than it is a crunch event. I view the individual cosms as this is our world laws that we have overlaid Core Earth because we're invading Core Earth, right? And so now we are here and we're trying to take over and turn this into whatever place we came from. Cadandra or marketplace or whatever. This is now what we're trying to anchor here and make this into, and we're all vying to turn it all into what we want it to be. So when you start out as, in this case, Core Earth, and you're going to transform into the Nile, there are certain things that the Nile Empire supports that Core Earth doesn't. And so when you transform, you become the things that the cosm supports, and you get rid of the things that the cosm doesn't support. And it's a thematic theater of the mind themed kind of thing, thematic themed, because it just, as Jay said, it's more of a closer analog, like pyrokinetic. You were a psionicist who had pyrokinesis. You manipulated fine. This was the example I used before we got on. Start recording. You cause damage with fire. You manifest fire the way that you do it here is psionics. The game mechanic is I'm a psi, I do it with my mind, but now you're transforming into, say, ile. How does ile manifest fire? Well, ile manifests fire through spell casting. What's the closest analog to a spell caster who manifests fire in ile? So it's a spell caster versus psionics. Well, the psionics, you take psionics and you pick three powers. Now you're going to go to Isle, you're going to take a spellcaster, and because you did fire damage, we're going to figure out what the closest spell is that you can take, that you qualify for, that does fire damage. And then we're going to move down the list. And for everything that your old character did, You had armor because you liked to stand there and take damage. Okay, well, in transforming to the Nile Empire, what armor does the Nile Emperor have? Well, maybe that because you did some other things I don't know if they have a flamethrower adaptation for the Rocket Rangers, but let's say you did some things and you take Rocket Ranger armor and you start building the
He's got a
same.
fire ray.
Yeah, and you make it a fire ray and build that into the Rocket Ranger armor. And whatever other powers you had, suddenly you transform into this. Well, I didn't have Rocket Ranger armor when in the Core Earth. No, you didn't. But that's what the Nile Empire looks at what you were when you transformed. It begins to mold and transform everything into what it has, and you come out the other side looking like this. And you're mentally. And we talk about this too, about, I was Core Earth, and when the invasion, the Axiom Wash hits me, I transform into whatever, living land. I become le I forget how computers work. I don't forget that computers are a thing, the magic box that we used to do, things that we could get, so we could get the papers that we handed in for food. That's how we got our food, was we banged on the magic box. Okay, well, that, you don't forget about computers completely, but you forget how they work. Your mind has transformed. I don't remember if it was Jay or Liam who brought up the cyberpapacy in the early days, that this was a way to allow for Catholics to still be Catholics, so that everybody didn't have to transform to the cyberpope religion. Well, that's easy. You can still be Catholic because we got the Julian Bible out there, and some people who still support that. Well, you got to have some people in the cosm that still support that too. So they're your Catholics. Okay. I don't have a problem with, I was this religion over here. Generally speaking, that religion isn't supported over here. So what's the closest analog? Will we trans sacculum? Okay, will we transform into the sacculum? Well, okay, that's a little different. I don't want to be this thing. Well, I'm sorry, you didn't want to transform either. This is not an event where we're playing this is what I want to be. You've gone through, from a game mechanical standpoint, you failed a role very badly. You failed another role very badly. There are consequences to these events. The dice will do what the dice do, or in our online case, Roll 20 does what Roll 20 does,
Sure.
whichever tabletop you happen to use. But you're coming out of this. Don't look at this as the end of your character. It's another chapter, and I have transformed a number of characters against my will. And if you look at it more of a role-playing opportunity to go from what you were to what makes sense in the new cosm, it becomes really interesting on who your character that you thought was going to be one thing turns into something else. And it becomes a really, really cool, story-driven, unexpected chapter in the Storm Knight's history, and I really enjoy it. So my closing statement on transformations is not to try and look at it as a way to figure out how do I game the system and crunch the math into doing, another point of damage or something like that. It's a change you should embrace as a something that you will become. Your hero will become something nobody else has, because you will transform. Nobody else has transformed this into that the way you transformed, and you will be a super unique character with a backstory that nobody else will have. And that, I think, people should embrace, because it's a lot of fun.
So yeah, I'll piggyback off of that and say that there are the two. There's the theme lore way of thinking, and then the crunchy mechanic way. And when new source books came out and they offered new perks and stuff, a lot of the prowess perks especially were available to multiple people. So pretty much when when Living Land came out, anybody who was playing a Living Land character, I just told them, hey, you get a free rebuild. And if somebody wanted a certain perk from it, I would be like, okay, you can swap out a perk if they met all the requirements. But for the Living Land person, that was a mechanical crunchy, I can tweak every little number and be a better person. you know, better make my character even better and more awesome than they were. And then when Nile Empire came out, all Nile Empire characters could do this, you know, could do the same thing. On the transformation, the Everlaw One is just trying to eliminate that contradiction. It's not trying to make the Storm Knight better. It's not trying to make the Storm Knight worse. It's just trying to make the Storm Knight work in that reality without contradictions. So anything that's not a contradiction, and the magic and the theory and stuff, would be a contradiction of the list, because Cyber Witches don't exist in Isle, so why would that transfer over? Boom, cut it off, put something in it that is close enough, and then the Everlaw One has done its thing and doesn't have to worry about the contradiction. That's why when you're from Core Earth and you found that you were adventuring an Isle and you got that magic, you know, weapon or belt, buckle of whatever, and you disconnect in Core Earth, and you roll bad again, and you transform, even though you're Core Earth, that item transforms. Because the Everlaw One doesn't care, basically. It's just eliminating contradictions. You're fine, your stuff isn't. But if you're not fine, then it's going to fix you. So that's kind of how I go along with it in the lore way. I have the mechanical changes when new books with new options come out that somebody wants. We can mechanically change when a big source book comes out that could potentially change an entire character. That player has the chance to just rebuild the character from ground up, and then everybody gets it as their book comes in. And then if you're transformed, though, you're going to be something similar. If you're a knight, you're going to become a cyber templar or, you know, something like that. If you're a swordman in Isle, you're going to become martial artist swordsman or type person in Pan Pacifica. It's just, you're not going to go from I'm a spellcaster in Isle to I am a Tharkold brute with a big impact hammer. You know, it's just, that's too complicated for the Everlaw of One. You know, it's just a singular drive to fix contradictions, not to make Storm Knights or Stormers, for that matter, better. But
hey, can I add one thing before we move on?
Mm-hmm.
From the Torgonized play standpoint, and this is the organized play approach. Whatever you transform into, you're going to have to still be a legal character. So you're going to have to qualify for everything that you take. In the example that was in the email, the White Witch list doesn't exist for an Isle Empire. You can't take that. So it limits itself on that. That's a common sense situation. And you're going to find some table variation based on who the GM is when you transform, but you should work with your GM to transform your character how that GM directs, so that it's still a legal qualifying character in organized play. That may or may not help, but it should, in my opinion, and this is where the table variation comes in, the GM is going to guide that, and in my case, I'm going to guide you towards what makes sense. And like Liam said, the Everlaw of One doesn't care what you want to be. It only cares about what's the easiest way to take what you were and fit you into what you're going to. So.
And then have real fun when you transform to Akashin or Malagua or something like that, which will happen. It will happen. Every game I've played in Relics of Power, we've had transformations into, oh, there's just half rules around. Let's come up with something.
I also just make one last statement about transformation. And this might actually go slightly against what you guys are saying, but the way I look at it, it is possible. Like, there are some realities where you could transform and basically still have the exact same perks and the exact same powers, right? You could go from one spellcasting cosm to another, or one psionic cosm to another. There's a fair amount of overlap, especially with Core Earth. Like, if you can kind of fake it in Core Earth, and then you might transform to Tharkold. They're like, hey, now I got him for real. In my personal opinion, I think if you transform your character from one reality to the other and you still keep everything the same, even if it is legal, that's still a failure. Like, I think that your character should change somewhat. So even though the Everlove 1 is about spending less resources, we all know it's easily gamed. It doesn't always work that way because that's how the High Lords get their energy. So, maybe the closest version isn't the one that's available, and you transform to the next reality
Right,
over,
like
you
you're
know?
just an army guy in Core Earth and transformed to Tharkold, well, all your army gear would fit the
Yeah.
axioms, but it wouldn't fit the flavor. So there
But
is that
you
flavor.
could just be a soldier from Core Earth, and then you transform to a protector in Russia. And maybe you've got an Alf sprayer or something, and you're like, oh, I'll change my fire combat to energy weapons. I don't know. I would still probably want to like throw some occult tech or something in there just to make you a little bit different. Maybe put some more points in intimidation, that sort of stuff. So I think to kind of piggyback on what Mark was saying too, think of transformation as a invitation to do more. To change your character and not just try to hang on to what you had.
Embrace where you're going, not,
Yeah.
yeah,
And
embrace it.
Jay, you're absolutely correct in that. It's not just axioms and world law, but there's flavor of those genres. There is a way that the people think and stuff. So yes, if you maybe manipulate a few skill points from here and there, hey, I have persuasion. Let's throw them over to intimidate. That makes more sense, even if you don't have
Absolutely.
the spells and the psionics. So yeah, I'm all for that. So okay, hopefully that answers the question about how to deal with spells, miracles, psionic powers upon transformation. Once again, Oliver, thank you very much for writing us. And now we can get into where we left off last time in the Ruins of the Living Land. I believe we're in the Prowess perks. We had talked about Mechanic and Scavenger, and we are now on Stalker. So Stalker has a prereq of at least two adds in stealth. And it says, so long as he's not surprised, the hero approaches enemies quietly and from cover when an encounter begins. So just any time an encounter begins, test stealth against the highest find of any foes present. On a success, the character can't be targeted if the villains act first. So if the villains win the initiative, they're the ones who act first. They can't target you. And if the heroes act first, then the villains are considered flat-footed. A good success retains flat-footed bonus regardless of who acts first. An outstanding success allows the stalker to attempt the same test again on the second round. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Stalker?
This perk is insane. Only the fact that it is hidden in this book is what has stopped everyone from taking it. It's incredibly powerful. If you have stealth, you should take this. That's just S tier, take it. Don't even think about it. The only reason you would not think to take this is because you have chameleon skin and could take something better, which we'll get to in a minute.
Mark, your thoughts on Stalker?
Yeah, as you were going through this, I was like, wow, this is really good. I'm gonna have to put this on the next character I build. If you're building a striker, or anybody who does deals damage, this is fantastic. I would say that this is, as Jay said, I think this is a no-brainer. 2 points in stealth, done, qualified, take it. And now nobody can shoot at me for potentially, if you've got a high enough stealth, nobody shoots
Which
at
you
me for
will.
2 rounds. I mean, how cool is that? And this is against the highest find in the group. So if you've got a bunch of guys that have a crappy find, Nobody shoot. Nobody can legally target you for 2 rounds. Now, here's one for you. Can I catch you in a blast? I'm not targeting you. I think I can catch you in a blast. I think I can blow you up or something along the. So grenades might be tossed in your general direction, not at you per se, but in your general vicinity frequently. That would be my answer as a game master. But as a Storm Knight, yeah, this is a great perk, and I want to take it.
So the two thoughts I have in addition to that is one, the reason not to take it would be the I'm the tank and I'm taking I want the attention on me, unless everybody in the group has it, and then it's like you get quote unquote ambushed. And they're all looking around like, hey, where do they go? And everybody for 2 rounds is can't be targeted because, you know, you're that good as a team. Yeah, it's a what I call a redonkulous perk. Really cool, really nice, solid. And I agree with Jay, the fact that this is either hidden in a PDF or a thin little pamphlet style booklet, I guess would be more the term, or, you know, finding it on maybe if you have it on when it works, the Torg Codex, but it's not in the main source books, and that's probably why everybody and their dog hasn't gotten this perk who's not a tank.
Yeah, now it's gonna be out.
Yeah, everybody will start.
If you just look at this versus Shadow Step, it's like, of course you could take both. So
right. So let's move on to Wrestler. So this is at least two adds in unarmed combat, which is grapple attacks are favored and do not incur the -2 damage penalty on a standard success. I believe this is specifically here because of the wrestler archetype that
backer all archetype. Of these are.
All of them.
Like, from all of these are backer archetype perks.
Okay, so that explains they were just taken from the archetypes and put into Ruins of the Living Land. So I just remember the actual wrestler archetype, I guess. I think it was a luchador. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Wrestler?
Wrestler's good. I think Wrestler was actually kind of used as one of the examples of one of the best backer archetype perks made, like, because it's balanced. It's good for what it is. It helps the archetype, and it's not overly crazy. And I believe it made it into either the Pan Pacific or not. Like, it made it into one of the official source books, didn't it, at some point? So, I think.
It might have. I just remember this. Yeah, as you said, it's a very kind of solid.
Yeah, it's very good. If you're making a wrestler, then it's really good. If you're going to be grappling at all. And grappling is kind of like a niche deal. And in most games, as soon as someone mentions the word grapple, everyone's like, oh, God.
And that's in any role-playing game.
Oh, here we go.
But this is nice because favored and not losing damage, both good. So, good. Not crazy. Good.
Mark, what would your thoughts, if anything else, on Wrestler?
No, it's a niche. If you build characters with concepts and you're like, well, I started out as this and then the Axiom Washes hit me and I became, based on who I was, I became this Storm Knight. This is a great idea that helps you do more damage with your hands when you grab things, because it you're favored, so you do better job of grabbing things because you know how. And you do more damage. So I would say anybody that's a high strength melee character who plans to occasionally grab some things, this is not a bad idea. I will say the negative on this, though, is that it doesn't do, and this goes back to Jay's statement about balance. I would say it would be something I would take at character creation or early on, because at higher levels, there's just not enough return for the amount of experience points you're going to have to spend to get it, because it's built into a full perk. But it it's well balanced. It's not super crazy, but it's, as Jay said, it's good.
Yeah, this is just a solid perk. So let's move on to Savagery perks, which would be Living Land specific perks, because we're dealing with the Ruins of the Living Land. But the first one is Hunter of Lanala. Prerequisite is Chameleon Skin and two or more adds in stealth. So another stealthy thing. Lanala represents the circle of life, and she gives you her blessing in the hunt. When an encounter begins, test stealth opposed by all foes find. If you succeed, you act before the villains, and they count as flat-footed during your action. On a good success, add +1 BD to the results of your attack, that action, or +2 BD on an outstanding result. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Hunter of Lanala?
So this is the one I was saying that is arguably, debatable, better than Stalker. But because it's just raw damage, and you could potentially end an encounter before it even starts. Now, the utility of Stalker of not being targeted is great, but that only affects you. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of funny because then the rest of your party could still get attacked. So the difference aside from that is flat-footed versus this is just more damage. Keep in mind, you do have to have chameleon skin to have that, and that gives you favored at all stealth tests. So you're already doing the stealth test at favored. So if you are going to make a Mistwalker or any Ghost Clan type sneak guy, this is, again, auto include. The biggest drawback this has versus Stalker is you can't combine it unless things get really weird with the Path of Shadows in Pan Pacifica, like you can with Stalker.
Mark, your thought on Hunter of Lanala.
Well, if we game it a little bit and you take your chameleon skin and then you qualify for Hunter of Lanala and you take Stalker, arguably mm-hmm. becoming a Stalker of Lanala, I think that it's it's kind of broken.
I want to add one of these as an NPC.
Yeah. I mean, holy cow, outstanding result, 2 BD. Increase your damage by 2 BD.
On top of whatever your attack would get you.
So if I start doing stuff like Brawler and Relentless and Deathclaw and all this other stuff that I'm just stacking this stuff up, and then I get into Stalker and Hunter of Lanala. Now, arguably that, we're in beta perk at the mm-hmm. beta tier at this point. But, I mean, the amount of damage that this is getting ready to do, you kind of need to make it a beta tier situation, because this is like test for defeat level damage that you're going to kick out there. But yeah, it's nice. There's a lot of things I can see where I would like to put this on, because it's good stuff. But, I mean, Living Land, because you got to have chameleon skin. You got to qualify for chameleon skin, right? So this is pretty much going to be
in the Dinos.
There you go. Well, if you took Chosen of Lanala,
right?
Then you can find. But again, that's a longer path. That's more experience, but mm-hmm. it's a nice destination when you get there. Holy cow!
It is worth noting that Hunter of Lanala doesn't need to be a surprise. It just needs to be that they're flat-footed. Mm-hmm. And I believe they're flat-footed if they're restrained as well. So if you have your buddy wrestler there,
or put someone Stalker, in a they're considered hold. Stalker. They're considered flat-footed. So
well, yeah,
done.
That's a surprise. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's really nice, and I definitely see these two or three, if you include the chameleon skin, really being cool, and it really evokes the. I mean, we're talking about Living Land type stuff. You're in the jungle, and all of a sudden a spear comes out of nowhere and just drops, the guy to your left. And you're like, where? Looking around, and you can't find him, so you can't target him, and then the next round, and then the next round, and then, oh, there he finally is, and hopefully you're not the only guy standing at that point. So, no, I think it's pretty cool. So let's go ahead and move on to hypnotic voice. Prerequisite is the primitive allure, charisma 10 plus, and two or more adds in persuasion. So there's three different prerequisites for this. And it says, your quiet voice has spiritual power. You must speak softly for the effect. So this power has only 10 meters of range, which is still 30, you know, over 30 feet. The target must be able to hear and understand you. Use an action, roll a contest between your persuasion and the target's willpower or spirit. If you win, the target is very stymied and loses his next turn. If you win with a good margin, you control the target's next action. An outstanding win has the same effect, plus you may roll the contest again as a simple action to maintain control for another round. Any damage to the target ends the effect. Only one target at a time may be affected, and a failed attempt makes the target immune for the rest of the scene. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on hypnotic voice?
This is actually a pretty good perk. It helps balance out primitive allure, because primitive allure is you need two adds in persuasion and a charisma of 8, and it gives you all your persuasion and beast riding tests become favored, but only against things with social axiom 8 or less. So that was always the big limitation on that. So this, however, even though it uses primitive allure as a prereq, doesn't have that axiom limitation. And so it's kind of a limited mind control.
Right.
Yeah, but it's also not, you're now also not favored on your persuasion in this.
Well, it's a prereq. So if you're talking to anybody who's axiom 8 or less, you'll be favored. But you won't be favored above that. Yeah. But it's still, it's like putting kill shot after double tap, right? It's like gives a reason first one to exist. So I think this is a good one. It's nice to have an actual charisma based persuasion like ability in the living land and not just be throwing sticks at people. So I really like this one.
And Mark, your thoughts on hypnotic voice?
Yeah, Jay mentioned it. I like it. It's living land mind control. I would like to see some more verbiage about what happens if the person who's speaking or exerting this hypnotic voice takes damage. Do we have a, you know, do they need to maintain concentration on something? Do they have to work at it? You know, it says damage to the target. So talk about, I'm the one that's talking and I'm using my voice here and I'm trying to convince you I'm convincing you to do things for me. Right. It doesn't talk about anything about how if I'm, oh, I want you, you know, that guy standing next to you that is your best friend and you've been adventuring with for years and years and years. Kill him for me. You know, that goes against everything you believe. Is there a bonus or not according to the way it's written, et cetera. I'd like to see a little bit more discussed about that. As far as it says, you can't target multi-target with this. Can you multi-action? I mean, I'd assume you can do a bunch of things and take the negatives on all the rolls. But it's a super cool. I see a lot of opportunities here. I see you kind of taking yourself out of the encounter to deal with this one individual, and essentially you're locking that one individual down. I mean, it's a stun lock for one individual, which in some encounters, arguably, that's the way to go. Grab that one threat, lock it down while the rest of the guys and gals deal with what's going on over here, whittle that down. This one's not, you know, this is the big damage dealer and it's not doing anything right now. Even if you can't control it, you roll good enough to just keep that threat out of the battle until this is more manageable and now they can just all mob that one and take it out. Okay, that's a viable tactic that you've kind of pulled yourself out of the fight, but you've done so and you've added value because you've taken out somebody on their side too. So I like it. It's a good perk. I think it needs a little bit more explanation, but I like it.
I like it too. I like also that it's not just a ongoing and ongoing and ongoing mind control. It's standard, it's one round. After that, if you take any damage, it stops. And if you fail, you can't attempt it again on the same target, so that prevents it from getting too crazy. But it's really nice. It's a nice thing to have, and again, it would be kind of cool. A lot of the perks we've been talking about today, as Jay said, you can make Eidos and Living Land characters and NPCs that aren't just throw sticks at things.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Jungle Blessed, which this is two adds in faith, and it says while not wearing armor, the character gains plus one bonus to unarmed damage, melee weapons defense, and unarmed combat defense. If restrained, she may contest the grappler with dexterity as a free action once each turn to eliminate the condition of, so that would be of the restrain condition. So Jay, what are your thoughts on Jungle Blessed?
I like the flavor of this one, but I don't think it really does enough. Plus one damage to unarmed, it's okay. The plus one to your defenses only against melee and unarmed. I don't know if that's worth the trade-off of no armor. But then again, if you're a living land character, there's only so much armor really out there. But the thing is, the combination of plus one unarmed damage and the other stuff being, it seems to be like split between you needing strength and dex. Because I would imagine if you don't want armor or you want to be a high dex character, you want to be hard to hit, those plus ones will come in handy. But then if you're doing plus one unarmed damage, then you're probably doing unarmed attacks. So you want some strength, but you also need a faith of two. To take this, so you're going to want to have like some spirit as well. So it's going to be hard to really go in all of those directions. But like I said, it's thematic. You could, I like the idea. I just don't, I think that the it needed a slightly more bonus to the defenses for me personally.
Mark, what are your thoughts on Jungle Blessed?
I think if you're going to build a Deathclaw, this has got to be on your list. I disagree with Jay on the defenses. That's just sauce to the goose, because the whole reason I'm getting it when I build the Deathclaw guy in the first place is to get that unarmed, those bumps on unarmed damage. I'm going to take Brawler, and you sit there looking, well, how do I get more? You want to take that Deathclaw into Isle and somehow get magic on your Deathclaw, which makes you a four case contradiction. But I'm a fan of the four case contradiction. I think it's fantastic. But another plus one on top of that I can get that is not a contradiction to me, absolutely take it. 100%. And the fact that makes me a little harder to hit, yeah, I absolutely take it. I don't see the faith adds as being a problem. That's three experience points. If I dump statted my spirit, nobody dump stats their spirit for the most part. But even if I did, it doesn't matter because all I'm doing is qualifying for this to get a plus one on my melee damage, and that's what I do. Whiptail in there, and now my unarmed attacks are favored, and I don't see this as it's a no-brainer to me if you're building a Deathclaw. Outside of that, it's okay. I mean, if you've already got the faith adds anyway, and you intend to do some kind of unarmed damage, yeah, why not? I mean, you already got the faith adds anyway. You're halfway there. Might as well take it. Makes you harder to hit. Makes you do a little more damage. You planned to do damage. You were doing faith for something else anyway, because you're some kind of something else for Lenala? Okay, sure.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I could see adding this, like you said, to Deathclaw for the bonus unarmed damage. If, as Jay had mentioned, there's not a lot of Living Land armor that gives like the plus fours and the higher pluses. for toughness or ways to boost defense, so this can help you not get hit. As well as if you add it with things like the thing there's a couple, I believe, savagery perks like bone marked and stuff that do up your toughness and armor. So this prevents hit. If you get hit, you take less damage. So for me, this is like the sprinkles on top of a sundae. This would not be the core, but this definitely kind of boosts a lot of stuff that you're going with. Even if you went, like Mark said, with the Chosen of Lanala and you have your wrestler, this helps you get out of those restraints when you fail your wrestling stuff. So, yeah, this is, like I said, I see this as sprinkles on top of the sundae that you've made with some of the core solid perks to make it even better. So now we will stop. We will pick up Stalager perks next time. We will do those. We have some Stalager and social perks still to go. But we do thank you for either listening or watching us. Please do write us at torgdcd@gmail.com, and we'll answer your questions like we did with Oliver, and if you have comments, we'll comment back on your comments. But until then, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.